Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, the UK Energy Secretary Ed Miliband has proposed the relaxing of planning regulations so people can erect wind turbines in their back gardens. Is that such a good idea? The journalist and author John Gibbons has a view on this. Afternoon, John.
Afternoon, Sean.
What do you think of it?
Yeah, this was a big deal, I'd say, about 10 or 15 years ago. There was quite the sort of interest around domestic wind turbines. Now, what you might have noticed since then is it has petered away completely. I mean, between where I came from today in Dunleary and here in Dublin, I didn't see a single domestic wind turbine anywhere along the way. In fact, I would challenge your listeners to maybe they can identify one. There's a couple you see along the motorways and so on. And they do certain services like providing a little bit of electricity, often in combination with a solar panel for a tiny little thing. You see them, for example, in Dunleary Harbour on a boat where there's really no other way to get a bit of electricity. So you get a couple of hundred watts. But as a serious option, there's nothing to be gained in small scale wind. And it's really kind of simple enough physics. And essentially, in order to get the heft out of a wind turbine, it needs to be big. And what we've seen over the last 10 or 15 years is wind turbines, industrial wind turbines, have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. Because every time you increase the length of a wing of a turbine, it increases the power capacity of that turbine enormously. It's something to do with the square of the root of the hypotenuse. Mm. But essentially, you as you double the size, you square the effect. Now, the converse of that is when they're smaller, they're very ineffective. Now, imagine for a second, Sean, that you're putting a wind turbine, a small wind turbine, maybe a meter blade, onto, say you're thinking of putting it onto your own home. First of all, in Ireland, certainly you would need planning permission for that, which you probably wouldn't get. Mm. Now, if you you've got to attach that, say, to the gable end of your house. Now, in high winds, that's going to generate a huge amount of vibration, because, of course, these things are designed to catch the wind. So you're going to get a lot of vibration. Now, if you have a bigger turbine, like a 3 to 5 kilowatt blade, that is going to, you won't be able to attach it to a house because it would shake the wall so badly that it would damage it. So what you need to do is have a very big garden and put the wind turbine up in it. You'd probably need to install a concrete base because these are subject to massive forces. The wind force in a good stiff 4.6 or higher breeze are really substantial. And remember, these devices are designed to catch the wind. Mm. So looking at that, who's going to put one of these in their garden? That's the question. Who's got a garden that size, first of all? Who's going to do it, second of all? Also, I'll talk you through the numbers, Sean, briefly, right? The various numbers have been done for domestic wind turbines here in Ireland. So if you start at the small end, 1 to 5 kilowatt, the cost of purchasing them ranges between about 2 and 10,000, right? That's just for that's the easy bit. That's the buying it. Now, medium turbine, 10 to 30 grand. However, installation can be between 5 and 20 grand, right? This is serious.
Crikey.
And also, if you're located down the garden, you now have to do underground cabling to bring the power back to your house. Mm. Now, they estimate that a 6 kilowatt system would cost between 18,000 to 25,000 euros installed, right? Now, that will obviously work reasonably well if you happen to be that lucky householder who has a big enough garden, whose neighbours aren't going crazy about this, by the way. That's another thing. People are not going... If you think you have trouble out in the countryside with them, wait till you bring these into urban areas. And, of course, in the countryside, you have the 500-metre setback rule so that people are well back from turbines. You put this on somebody's house in the middle of a street and there's going to be problems. Now, the thing is, we do have an alternative. That's the great thing because, again, the reason I think wind turbines were being considered 15 years ago, Sean, is that... solar technology at that stage was very expensive and not that good. But what's happened in the intervening decade and a half is solar has exploded. So even here in relatively cloudy Ireland, solar technology is an absolute winner. So, I mean, for example, I remember starting writing about solar around about 2020. And at that stage, I was speaking to a professor in Trinity. And I think she worked out that there was something like 50 megs of solar installed in the entire Republic of Ireland. In other words, damn all, right? Mm. Now, the current figure is somewhere of the order of 1.75 gigawatts, right? Now, of course, that isn't full power all the time, but it's a very valuable contribution. And if I can explain what 1.75 gigawatts looks like, that's the equivalent, Sean, of about 3 medium-sized gas power stations, right? So that's not all the time, right? That's at peak performance, but remember, this is providing energy at a time during the day when there's a lot of demand from industrial users, from particularly from data centers and so on. So it is very valuable. Another important thing to say is that in that intervening 10 or 15 years, we now have 140,000 houses in Ireland that have on-roof solar panels. 140,000. Now, they're providing a good chunk, about a third of that 1.75 are actually being provided by domestic, what they call prosumers. Horrible phrase. It literally means a producer consumer.
Yeah.
And these people are essentially, their meters are going backwards. So in good weather like we're having at the moment, and friends of mine who recently installed solar panels, they're essentially getting paid about 200 quid a month. They're getting back in more electric.
200 quid a month?
200 quid a month, Sean. Now, this is the months of May and June,
okay,
right?
Yeah.
Now, come back to me in October and November, it won't
sure.
be so good.
Yeah.
But over the year, what it means is essentially, with they'd be a relatively low consuming household, but with a modest consuming household, you can probably have your electricity bill. Now, the thing is, I mentioned that 18 to 25 grand for the wind turbine, right? Mm. If you had the exact location for it. Now, they reckon it might, if it worked, it might save you 1,500 quid a year on electricity. Now, imagine how many years it's going to take to pay back. At a quick calculation, about 20 years. That's not a good payback. And I'll tell you why. By 20 years, the equipment will probably have worn out and you'll have to replace it. So you'll never get your money back. A solar installation will give you full payback in 5 to 6 years. And anyone, by the way, who doesn't believe me, ask, you know, that great climate champion, Michael O'Leary?
Yes.
Yeah, he has a great big solar array. And I can promise you this, Michael O'Leary isn't doing it because he wants to make friends with the green movement. He's doing it because the economics of it are overwhelming. And he said himself, he's up in not so sunny Westmeath and he's saving 36 grand a year in electricity costs on his very large ranch up in Westmeath.
Right, crikey. For the average though, so bang for your buck, no doubt about it, solar is the way to go. Which does beg the question of what the hell is Ed Miliband thinking that this is even a good idea at all?
And on that, Sean, I think I was reading through the report and I think it's really a headline grabber was to put the domestic thing in the headline, right?
Yeah.
I think it was a little bit of click. The reality is in Britain, they're planning to double their onshore wind capacity from 15 to about 30 gigs, and that will be about 99.9% through industrial wind farms. The other stuff, I think, is just to send the people in the home counties into a spin.
Right, okay, a bit of excitement. If and for people listening, and many people like around where I live, nearly every other day somebody's putting up solar panels. Do you need the battery?
It's you don't need it, but it's a really good idea if you can afford it. The minimum usually
you have someplace to put it.
They're fairly compact, Sean. So the minimum setup usually is a 5 kilowatt battery, and it allows you to sort of equalize the use of it. And people are doing really smart things with this. For example, let's say you're harvesting surplus electricity during the day, which you are. Top up your battery and use it during the evening and overnight. Also, some people who have been extra clever, if they have a bigger battery, they take the really cheap electricity, say between 2 and 4, and fill their battery up with that and then use that back during the day. So if you've got a bigger, say, a 10 or 20 kilowatt battery, you can actually harvest the cheap electricity. And by the way, the grid doesn't mind you doing this because they have to keep a certain amount of power stations spinning overnight. And if they don't use the electricity, the thing to understand about electricity is that a millisecond after it's produced, it must be consumed. And if it's not, it's earthed and lost. So therefore, the electricity companies are very happy for you to take that and store it. And I will say this, and this is a complete change from where I've been looking at this for the last decade or so. And that is, you combine batteries and solar, and you have an incredible combination. And we're seeing, for example, in Donegal, there's a thing called planning permission for an iron solar array. This is a new battery storage system that allows you to store for up to 100 hours of battery storage. The typically, Sean, as you know, the issue with batteries is they're very good, they're very quick, but they run out very quickly.
Yeah.
Right? The issue now, technology is coming on in leaps and bounds. We're seeing, for example, the Chinese have run away with battery technology. I could give you another half an hour just on what they've done, because of course, normally when we mention China, people say, oh, all the power stations, all the coal-fired stations.
Yeah. Yeah.
The real revolution that's happening in China right now is that they have just, as of the end of May 2025, they have commissioned 1 terawatt of solar panels. Now, 1 terawatt is 1,000 gigawatts. So that's the equivalent of about 1,200 money point power stations of solar panels. They reckon that in the month of May 2025, China was installing approximately 200 solar panels a minute throughout the month, like 24 hours a day in that month. So the thing with China is they don't back that out of ideology, unlike other countries. They do it because it works. They're very technocratic and so on. And they're transitioning their gigantic economy towards renewable, not because they want to get a green prize, Sean, but because solar energy is the cheapest form of energy in human history. That, by the way, quote isn't from me. That's from the International Energy Agency.
Yeah. So one listener says, in the Netherlands, they've stopped making payments to clients for sending electricity to the grid because there's too much. That's what will happen if we all go to solar panels.
Well, what do you do with that then?
Are you getting paid now if you don't have solar panels?
Well, at the moment, well, yeah, exactly. And of course, the thing is with interconnectors, if Holland, for example, is overproducing electricity, its neighbours are delighted to buy it.
Yeah,
this is
yeah.
the point that with interconnection, and of course next year, sorry, 2027, we should have a direct connection to France. We already have interconnectors, one through Northern Ireland, and I think two onto the island of Britain. Those interconnectors will allow us to sell our surplus electricity. And remember, this is happening in milliseconds, right? So don't worry about additional Dutch electricity. They'll find somebody. There's an limitless market in the European Union for clean, instant electricity. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I travel down, I don't know if you can answer this question, but I travel down some streets and see solar panels on both sides of the street. One side facing east, the other west. Who's right?
Okay, excellent question, right? In Ireland, you can put solar panels on, obviously south is best.
Yeah.
But you can put them on east and west and you only get a small fall off in performance. So essentially, you can put them on three out of four directions. You don't put solar panels facing due north for obvious reasons, but they work. You only get a loss of about 10 to 20% on an east and west facing pitch. And of course, the other thing is, if you're fortunate enough to have dual pitches, you actually even out your solar thing. So instead of having a spike during midday, which you get, say, on a south facing panel, if you also have west, you continue that right into the late afternoon, early evening. So the short answer is, if you're lucky enough to have somewhere, and we're seeing this, Sean, on the continent, people are putting solar panels on the balconies of apartments, right? They're putting them everywhere. I've even seen fences made of solar panels. In fact, one of my favourite ones in India, they're actually laying, you know, railway tracks?
Yeah.
They're laying solar panels down the railway tracks, down simply between the rails. Because why not, right?
Yeah.
It's land that is otherwise not used. The trains are only over it for a few seconds at any given time. And this is this huge area that is publicly controlled, and they put them in. Other places that we've seen solar panels being deployed are over lakes. Dual benefit. Number one, you got all this space. And number two, it reduces evaporation. We've seen them being installed in Asia over canals, because you harvest the sun and you reduce the evaporation. In fact, the evaporation underneath the panels improves their performance, because solar panels, believe it or not, don't like it when it gets very hot. That's why they work quite well in Ireland. Above about 25 degrees centigrade, their performance begins to degrade a bit. So in Ireland, even though we don't get that fantastic sort of sunny Spain kind of sunshine, they work well in bright daylight. And also, we get a lot of bright daylight in this country. So I know I sound like the solar salesman here. I promise you, I'm
you're
selling,
doing a great job.
Well, it makes a great change, Sean, from instead of coming into studios and saying it's all over, it's terrible. These are solutions. And what I love about solar is that it works at the mega scale. When you see solar farms, they're fantastic. They give a great income to farmers. They also give, converting, say, 1,000 hectares of land into a solar farm is the best possible use of that land, bar none. And in fact, there's nothing more efficient, probably pound for pound. In fact, even if you're just interested in carbon, a hectare of solar will trap and reduce more carbon emissions than a hectare of the best quality forest that you can imagine, right? So those people who say, it's industrializing the countryside, I think they're entirely wrong about that.
I think you might be late for that meeting you were telling you about earlier on.
I might be.
You know what? We're going to have you back on this, because we've so many questions flying in, we couldn't get to them all. John Gibbons is an environmental journalist. John, thanks a million for coming into us.
Thanks, John.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.